Let's go to 2 Kings, chapter 18.
That's where I would have gone.
Now it came to pass in the third year of Hosea, son of Elah, king of Israel, that Hezekiah, the son of Ahaz, king of Judah, began to reign. Now you understand that there are two kingdoms now. Judah is the kingdom of the tribe of Judah and the tribe of Benjamin. The other 10 tribes are called Israel. The two southern tribes, Judah and Benjamin, are called Judah. And that's where we get the name Jew from. Israel, the 10 tribes of Israel, got lost in history. God lost them. He can't find them. The two tribes got lost after about 1000 AD. There has not been a Jew for at least 1800 years. Zero Jews, bloodline. Everybody that calls themselves a Jew now came from the Khazar kingdom. Anyway, here we're talking about Hezekiah, the king of Judah. 25 years old was he when he began to reign, and he reigned 29 years in Jerusalem. His mother's name was Abi, the son of Zechariah. And he did that which was right in the sight of the Lord, according to all that David his father did. Now, this is the first indication that we have that David dealt with the high places, because he said that Hezekiah did the same thing that David did. Understand? He removed the high places, break the images, cut down the groves, and break in pieces the brazen serpent that Moses had made. For unto those days did the children of Israel did burn incense to it, and he called it Nehushtan. He trusted in the Lord God of Israel, so that after him was none like him among all the kings of Judah, nor any that were before him. Anyway, this was done immediately prior to Passover. We've talked about groves, we've talked about images, we've talked about the general high place identity, but we've not talked before about the brazen serpent. And the fact that the Jews, it wasn't that he called it Nehushtan, it was that the Jews called it Nehushtan. It's a big mystery what it means. Well, it can mean a piece of brass or a piece of copper. They really didn't have brass as we know it. They had copper. And so the brazen serpent was really the copper serpent, but that's another story. But in Hebrew, it has to be, it can't be called a piece of brass or a piece of copper because of the way it's used. It has to be called as a proper name. And the word for copper and the word for serpent are almost exactly the same. And so what it says is they called it the chief serpent, or the chief. Nehushtan means the chief serpent, or the chief, if you will, fertility god. It's the chief god. Now, why did Moses have this stupid thing? I mean, this is pretty late in the history of Israel, so we know it has to do something pretty deep. Moses built this thing, brazen serpent, copper serpent, fiery serpent, whatever you want to call it, and now Hezekiah destroyed it. And Moses built it pretty late in the history of his activity. What?
Well, they already had the temple, so it's been hanging around. Where? I mean, like up on a mountain somewhere, and somebody had charge of it?
No, it was in the temple.
But did they ever talk about him making it back here?
Yeah, he told him to make it by God.
God told him to make it. Let's go back and see if we can see what's going on. Numbers 21.
They looked up at it, they were saying that.
Numbers 21.
Well, that's right, we studied this long ago.
We just sort of looked at it briefly. Now we're going to study it. Chapter 20, Numbers 21, chapter or verse 4. And they journeyed from Mount Hor by the way of the Red Sea to surround the land of Edom, or to go around the land of Edom. And the soul of the people was much discouraged because of the way. Now, so they're going. Edom is the flesh. Do you remember that? Edom means the type of the flesh. And they've finessed the flesh by going around it. They didn't battle the flesh, which is the great lesson that we must see. God isn't battling your flesh. You don't really give a shit about your flesh. You got it? He's not testing your flesh. He's not trying to get your flesh to do anything. Your flesh is going to die. And that's what it's supposed to do. All it's supposed to do is contain a mystery. Okay, so the part of this mystery is, as Israel was going around Edom, the people were much discouraged because of the way. And I'm sure none of you know anything about that. Now it says, really, the better translation, the heart of the people was very impatient because of the way. Now, to be impatient, we think impatient means, you know, somebody that wants something right now and they have to have it. The spiritual meaning and the Hebrew meaning here of impatience is somebody that is not in a perfect state of contentment. If you're not in contentment, you're impatient. Impatient, without patience. Anyway, the soul of the people was much discouraged because of the way. Doesn't say the spirit of the people was discouraged. The soul of the people was discouraged. You know, I'm sure all of you know the difference between soul and spirit. And the people spake against God and against Moses, "Wherefore have you brought us up out of Egypt to die in the wilderness? For there is no bread, neither is there any water, and our soul loatheth this light bread." The rabbis say that whenever, this is the 11th testing of Israel in the wilderness. The rabbis say that whenever, I mean, when Israel massively complained in the wilderness, whenever it says that the people spake against God and against Moses, they never spake against God. They always spake against somebody that was their leader. Either Miriam or Aaron or Moses, but they never spake against God. They always could finesse it and say, "We're not mad at God, but," you got it? But the scripture, spirit, sees that as speaking equally against God. And the Lord sent fiery serpents among the people, and they did bite the people, and much of the people died. People were just being honest. They were just saying what was there. They were just prophesying. And they got discouraged, and they were really sincere, and they were just explaining their feelings, and they were real sincere. They didn't mean it in any kind of a bad way. And God killed them. Why? Because they denied the resurrection. He killed them by sending fiery serpents. Now, it's not that the serpents were on fire or that the color of the serpents was fiery or whatever. It was that the venom of these serpents caused the people to feel as though their insides were on fire. That every nerve ending in their body was so activated that it felt like they were on fire inside. That it had the other provision of that it dried up, it utilized, or it was a diuretic that caused all the moisture from the body, the venom was, to be gone, and they felt it like they were dying of thirst while every nerve ending in their body made it feel like they were on fire with third-degree burns. And they just hurt so bad, they died. Thousands upon thousands upon thousands of them. And they were there because the people were discouraged. God sent fiery serpents because the people were discouraged. That's not very fair.
Doesn't seem like the antidote for discouragement.
Solve the discouragement. All right. The Lord sent fiery serpents among the people, and they bit the people, and much people of Israel died. Therefore the people came to Moses and said, "We have sinned, for we have spoken against the Lord and against thee. Pray unto the Lord that he take away the serpents from us." And Moses prayed for the people. And the Lord sent a wind and it destroyed all the serpents. And all the serpents fell into a deep hole and they didn't bother the people of Israel anymore and they lived happily ever after. Well, it didn't happen that way?
No.
Oh. The serpents continued to bite the people. After the man who the scriptures say heard every word, God heard every word that he spoke, answered every prayer that he prayed. God, the people asked Moses to pray, he prayed, and the snakes continued to bite the people. And they continued to feel like they were on fire inside out. Moses prayed for the people. And the Lord said unto Moses, "Make thee a fiery serpent, and set it upon a pole. And it shall come to pass that everyone that is bitten, when he looketh upon it, shall live." And Moses made a serpent of brass, and put it on a pole. And it came to pass that if a serpent had bitten any man, when he beheld the serpent of brass, he lived. Except the word beheld means to see with understanding.
Something I never thought about before, that it just says he lived. It didn't say he was like instantly cured and real comfy. It's like he just survived.
Well, let's go to 1 Corinthians 10. Keep your hand there a minute. Now look at what happened. If we're, we just read 2 Kings, 1 Kings, 2 Kings 18. We just read it. You remember? No, we're not going back there, because that's all we wanted to see, is that part of the high place thing that Hezekiah did was he destroyed this totem. He destroyed the copper serpent, which God had told Moses to make. And it was in the temple, by the way, and it was a big deal. Okay, First Corinthians chapter 10. Moreover, brethren, I would not that you should be ignorant how that all our fathers were under the cloud and all passed through the sea, and were all baptized unto Moses in the cloud and in the sea, and did all eat the same spiritual meat, and did all drink the same spiritual drink, for they drank of that spiritual rock that followed them, and that rock was Christ. But with many of them God was not well pleased, for they were overthrown in the wilderness. Destroyed in the wilderness. Better, overthrown is not strong enough. Now these things were our examples, to the intent that we should not lust or desire after evil things as they also desired. Neither be ye idolaters as were some of them, as it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. Neither let us commit fornication as some of them committed and fell in one day 23,000. Neither let us tempt Christ, or test Christ, as some of them also tempted and were destroyed of serpents. Okay, go back to Numbers. Numbers 21. Somehow, that experience, this little bitty dealy here of 3 or 4 verses in chapter 21 of Numbers, Paul says it's the example of why and how we should not tempt Christ. And it's fairly late in the game. Do you understand? I mean, this is, they've been all through Leviticus and, huh?
I mean, when they finally destroyed the serpent, it was after David.
Oh, yeah. No. I'm talking about even here.
This was the 11th.
In the 21. This was the 11th of 12 testings. In the wilderness. They were just about ready to go into the promise, those that made it. The two made it out of 6 million. And they called the fact that they were complaining because they were discouraged being on the way, they called that, or Paul calls that, the testing of Jesus Christ. That you put God to the test. Now, I want you to come out of this next high place scenario or scene, never again believing that being discouraged or a little bit out of whack or out of sorts is anything other than testing Christ. I want you to get so sick of your own sincerity that your eyes would be open, that you would see with clarity what you're doing. Now, why was it to be discouraged to tempt Christ? And why did God then send fiery serpents? And why was the healing of it an image of a serpent that if they looked on those that were bitten would be healed? The reason is why did God make the serpent the one that did the harm and the looking upon the serpent as the one that did the healing? That's pretty stupid. That's liable to cause all kinds of confusion. What?
They had to do good and bad. I mean,
obviously they knew what they were doing. They said, "We have sinned, or we have spoken against the Lord and against you."
Well, some of them did.
Isn't it like knowing that everything has that it had to happen, that they had
to? They had to come to the place where they knew that God was the very cause of whatever it was that was causing them discouragement. That it could not be from any other source. It could never be another person. It could never be another situation. It couldn't be a time. It couldn't be any other reason other than God himself. That's why it's the 11th of the 12 testings, the major testings in the wilderness. It's a biggie. It's a biggie to be able to see that whatever it is that's causing you the complete discouragement and weirdness is from God.
This goes back to our discussion when we were talking about this looking at a different way, about blaming, the blame we cast out, you know, at others or other things.
I was talking to Jackie about the good, and when I said a good and bad, it was really hard for me to understand that bad things come from God. I mean, it's been in me for a long time. It was hard try to figure out, you know, well, how could God do that, and how could...
Well, it still is.
Well, yeah, I know that now, but that's when, you know, that it comes, good comes from him, so does the bad, and so...
Do you understand how rare it is to truly believe in one God? Uh-huh. It's the rarest thing in the universe.
Yeah, every little it's why I believe that every little irritation of life, you know, your car being screwed up, or your relationship being screwed up, or your health being screwed up, is equally from God, just like the sunrise.
I mean, yeah, and that seems what this is addressing, because it wasn't like there was some big pestilence that was on them. It was just like they were tired, or they were, you know, it's like this is so boring, or something. The little
that's why, that's the thing we seem to contest the most. I mean, just. We come out, oh, you know, bum-bass, just kind of general boredom, or kind of hits close to home.
Well, I want you to come to the conclusion right now that first of all, it was only a couple of the people here that we have any reason to believe that said, we have sinned, for we have spoken against the Lord. It was a jillion people that had said, we're discouraged because of the way. But it was a jillion plus X that were stung by the serpents. In other words, God wasn't dealing with them after their individual activity. God was dealing with them as a people. And the same lesson that we learned about when the Achan seat, when he buried something and he the whole of Israel got defeated until it was seen. Well, here we're in the same position. All of the people are treated equally if you are discouraged. It'll affect every one of the people in the body negatively. Do you understand that?
Yeah.
It's a biggie. Don't say you understand it if you don't.
Does it affect everybody just once it's seen and preached at, or affects everybody even when it's just like unsaid?
Yeah, we do. I mean, all of us have felt that too.
Sure.
Somebody's yanked up and they're in a different body.
Wow, you find out about later. God, it really was like a shit week.
Or even if somebody in here. I mean, I know I always get this tightness or just the feeling of fear. It almost when someone is.
Okay, now let's go to Hebrews 2. Hebes, chapter 2. All of chapter 1 of Hebrews is about the magnitude or the magnifying of the sun, the wonder of the wonders, the fact that all things in the universe and in many separate ways and many separate revelations, a portion of the truth has been revealed to the prophets and the wise men, but now the fullness of the truth is revealed in the sun. It's still hard for you to believe that truth isn't a concept, it's a person. That's a biggie. Because otherwise you try to segment your life, i.e. you try to believe that there are little pieces of things, that my life is in general okay, but there are one or two things here and there that need correcting. You understand that? That's the lie. That's the lie of believing. That's the fruit of believing that truth is a concept or a series of constructs. As long as you believe that, then your mind will always be deceived and seduced away from the root of your enigma. It'll have its... It will always point, you know, at something other than I am the chief of sinners. All right. So anyway, we've gone. That's what all of chapter 1's about. Therefore, in chapter 2, verse 1. Therefore, we have to give the Therefore, we ought to give the more earnest heed to the things which we have heard, lest at any time we should let them slip. So now, we have in us the capacity to let this stuff slip. Now, we don't want to hear that. We don't want to know that. We don't want to have to be in a position in which we are constantly aware of something. Therefore, we believe we can abandon ourselves. You know, I preached to you about abandonment ever since I've met you. Abandon yourselves, pick up your cross and follow him. And you've tried to abandon yourself, and every time you try to think about it, you can't think about abandoning yourself, obviously. And you can't abandon yourself into nothing. You have to abandon yourself into something. What you abandon yourself into is something, is Christ. If you abandon yourself into nothing, then you will abandon yourself into nothing. And your abandonment will be like all the other stuff you try to do. That's nothing. All right. For if the word spoken by angels was steadfast, and every transgression and disobedience received a just recompense of reward, how shall we escape if we neglect so great a salvation? So now we have the capacity to let it slip and to neglect it. Which at the first began to be spoken by the Lord and was confirmed unto us by them that heard him. God also bearing them witness, both with signs and wonders, with diverse miracles and gifts of the Holy Ghost, according to his own will. For unto the angels hath he not put in subjection the world to come whereof we speak. But one in a certain place testified, saying, What is man that thou art mindful of him, or the son of man that thou visitest him? Thou madest him a little lower than the angels, and crowned him with glory and honor, and set him over the works of thy hands. Thou hast put all things in subjection under his feet. For in that he put all in subjection under him, he left nothing that is not put under him. That is the condition of faith. There is no situation, and to personalize it, there is no molecule in your life that isn't under the perfect control of God. Do you understand that? There is no situation that you're facing at work. There's no situation you're facing with your parents. There's no situation you're facing with anyone. There's no situation you're facing with health or lack of it. There is no condition in your entire life in every arena that isn't exactly under his control, exactly as it should be tonight.
I guess what I don't understand then is part about how we let it slip.
Because you are the only one in the universe that has the capacity to think that his situation is different, should be different than it is.
So if you know that everything is ordered by God, then it's easier to relax, and it's not like some strange thing.
It's like I'm learning. You know, that we think we've learned, which is that we haven't confessed.
Okay. Thou hast put all things in subjection under his feet, for in that he put all in subjection under him, he left nothing that is not put under him. But now we see not yet all things put under him. Now, it's obvious. When I am in, you know, when I'm concerned about Harry, for instance, or I'm concerned about Tyra or Rick or anybody, you know, I'm concerned they're going to go off and do some weird shit, or that they're going to go away, or that whatever, or jillion other concerns. I don't see them in subjection to Christ. When I see the most obvious example in me is when I'm in that terrible pain, I cannot believe that God is in control. When I see babies starving to death on television, when I see famine and pestilence, and when I see these terrible crimes that I'm confronting in the grand jury, I cannot believe that God is in control.
I was telling you, I saw that movie last night, and it's about the Civil War, and in the Civil War, they just run at each other. I mean, there's no military stuff, it's just people running at each other, shooting and stabbing. And that's what I was thinking the whole time, so I can't believe, I mean, I knew it was real, I knew it happened, but I can't believe God let that happen. I mean, it was just so, it seems so meaningless. I mean,
but he does that, right?
Yes.
Yeah. It's like what you were talking about the other day about how each of us, the specific test for each of us. And it's just, it is really hard to see in that one particular thing. But oh yeah, this is God.
We don't see everything put under him. But yet it says everything is under him. But we don't see everything put under him. But we see Jesus. Now, to see Jesus doesn't mean that I run around seeing 900-foot Jesus in some prayer tower. It means to see or perceive that he is the author of that moment. You understand that? That there is no condition in your life that he isn't the author of, and that if there is anything in your life but joy, it's because not of any situation that you can conceive of. It's because you haven't seen Jesus. Now, the object lesson for this is Numbers 21, the fiery serpents. Are you discouraged in the way? Are you discouraged because of the way? Well, you have about 3 days till Tuesday night to be discouraged, to get by with it. Do you understand? Do you understand what I'm talking about? That if you can't the net effect in this hot seat is for you to lose the right to, you will have lost the right to be in any other position than joy. You'll be without excuse. In that he put all in subjection under him, he left nothing that is not put under him. But now we see not yet all things put under him, but we see Jesus. For it became him for whom are all things, and by whom are all things, and bringing many sons unto glory, to make the captain of their salvation perfect through sufferings. I don't think you guys realize what this is about. Where? In the most honest position that you can imagine. Standing before God with all honesty, knowing that you cannot get by with any act. Where are you discouraged? Face it. Where are you out of sorts? Where are you comparing yourself with someone else? Where are you living a lie in not admitting where is the discouragement because of the way? You see it? You see what I'm talking about? Now, the reason that Hezekiah had that brazen serpent destroyed is because in the temple, the brazen serpent became the instrument, the totem, to meet whatever little prayer requests the people had. I mean, if it hadn't been destroyed, Robert Tilton would have had him hang. He would have handed him out. I mean, it represents every evil in the heavenly lottery theology. And that's why Hezekiah was told to destroy that brazen serpent. You understand me?
I understand that part. But I don't understand what the function was when Moses made it. And the people looked on it.
Because it caused them to see that the act of that which was troubling them and the act or thing of their salvation was the same thing.
Okay, but what they did ultimately was they took that and...
They beheld it with understanding and they were freed.
Right, but I mean, in the temple, the reason it was destroyed is they took that and they took
made it a prayer.
And they said that the serpent saved us.
So it's like there was no difference between that and that.
No, it was the instrument of Babylon in the temple. Well, this thing, if you were dying, fiery pain going through every nerve ending in your body and feeling like you were dying of thirst, and you heard somebody say, you know, and you saw the snake that bit you, and you saw Moses holding up an image of that snake, and you saw that if you looked on that snake with understanding, you'd be healed. I look on that snake with understanding, and the pain goes away. I'm in peace and happiness and joy, etc.
You understand, the understanding being that the snake was from God.
Right.
Okay.
Now, by the same token then, after a couple of generations, or with this group, a couple of days, all of a sudden that brazen serpent would be transformed into something that if I hold my mouth the right way and have my hair combed at the right angle, then whatever I ask that serpent, I'll get.
Because that will be from God.
Right. Because it'll become an instrument of what it is, it's the same as worshiping Tammuz, but that's another story.
Well, basically, though, you're worshiping the desire. I mean,
am
I understanding that right?
No, you're just not seeing that the thing that caused it to become the totem was the fact that you were deceived by your mind into believing you were discouraged now.
But the discouragement was working your salvation.
Well, this discouragement, you know, to everything there's a time and a purpose to everything. Okay, now it's time for the discouragement to be gone. Okay, go to Isaiah 45 for your benefit. Okay, Cyrus is the Gentile type of Christ. So all the promises are to Christ in Cyrus and to Christ in you. But thus saith the Lord to his anointed, to Cyrus, whose right hand I have holden to subdue nations before him. I will loose the loins of kings to open before him the two levied gates, and the gates shall not be shut. I will go before thee and make the crooked places straight. I will break in pieces the gates of brass and cut in sunder the bars of iron. I will give thee the treasures of darkness and the hidden riches of secret places, that thou mayest know that I, the Lord, which call thee by thy name, am the God of Israel. For Jacob my servant's sake and Israel mine elect, I have even called thee by thy name. I have surnamed thee, though thou hast not known me. I am the Lord, and there is none else. There is no God beside me. I help thee, though thou hast not known me, that they may know from the rising of the sun and from the west that there is none beside me. I am the Lord, and there is none else. I form the light and create darkness. I make peace and create evil. I, the Lord, do all these things. Now, that's what has to be penetrated and made manifest in you, that there is only one God. That's all that this is about. You as a hunk of protoplasm believe other things are gods, including you. You believe there is other places to get sustenance or strength or satisfaction or joy or whatever. It comes in other places. And so those are the things that you believe are gods. Okay? So, the question is, gut level honesty, where are you discouraged? Okay? That's what this hot seat is about.
Don't we have to answer that on the hot seat?
Yeah, you're going to have to talk about it.
So we're not talking about it yet?
No.
You get to think about it now. Or...
No. What you're going to find out is a whole lot of what you think is discouragement is that you've been taught sort of by almost an unseen teacher that you think you should be discouraged about something. It's not real. You understand?
Not what is it so
you think you should.
I said it's not so unseen. Yeah, it's called apparent moment.
Yeah. Well, but there are a whole lot of things that you feel discouraged about, right? The only reason you feel discouraged is because someone has taught you that you should be discouraged about it. It has nothing to do with your real state of being. Can anybody have any questions about this fiery serpent? Well, that's enough. I don't feel like talking anymore.
That is
take a big guy.